How do you talk to the young people in your life about violence? Victoria Police community workers are urging, almost pleading with us at the moment to start those conversations. Is it as simple as that? So far, I think we're learning was that it's certainly not as simple as that. Many of you may have heard of the Les 20 Men Foundation. Now, this is a frontline group of youth workers and have been so for decades that work with kids that are at risk, young people that are experiencing all forms of stresses from poverty, mental health issues, unemployment, racism, addiction, and domestic violence and crime. They work a lot with the area in the western suburbs, and one of the youth workers is Gum Marmor. Gum, you're an outreach youth worker with the Les 20 Men Foundation. Welcome to the Conversation Hour.
Thank you. Thank you, Rochelle.
First of all, let's get a little bit about your story. You arrived in Australia as a refugee back in 2004 from Africa, from South Sudan, I believe. Did you ever worry that when you were in Australia that you were on the wrong path, on a path of violence?
I wouldn't say path of violence, but I would say that when I first arrived into this country, I mean, everything was quiet. It was a big shift and a big change for me because I came from a refugee background, and moving into Australia was obviously huge change for anyone, for any young person. I wouldn't say I was violent during that time though, but I was in situations where I had to sort of fend for myself and try to make my values, trying to figure out who I am as a person and put my values forward and what my family stand for, I guess.
What do you remember from that time?
Oh, it was very difficult, I guess. I couldn't speak English, and everyone, I come from a country where everyone looks exactly like me, and then no one looked like me, and then I would try to say hi to people, and people wouldn't approach me, and people were reluctant to talk to me, and yeah, it was very, very, I was trying to be as friendly as possible, but other people weren't so nice back, so it was a difficult time, I must say, but I think over the years, you get to learn, and you get to figure out your way, and as you grow as a young person, and as you grow into, for me now as a 27-year-old man, I think those early stages of my life in Australia really shaped who I became and who I am today.
It's an interesting age, isn't it? And we're only sort of doing more research now into that period, from sort of 10 to 15. And, you know, if you're struggling with who you are and where you belong and what your identity is, if you find a group of like-minded people, or you find a group of people that accept you, whether they be nice people or not, whether they be violent or not, does that give you acceptance? You know, even if you're falling into the wrong crowd, does it give you a sense of belonging?
Look, one of the things that we're finding out is that, and I think it's always been, it always existed, it's the peer influence and where young people find themselves in a group of friends. And usually what the group of friends do is what they end up doing also. And I think currently in our society, especially in Melbourne, in our suburbs, a lot of young people are actually congregating, and usually it doesn't turn out to be the best environment for them. And I think we need to put a lot of safety measures in place to making sure they're actually engaged at school, making sure there's positive influences and peers around them, or mentors, to make sure we support them throughout that period. And we need to equip the parents and making sure we engage the parents really, really well. And I think some of our programs at the Les 20 Men Foundation do exactly that, and that's our aim.
And I want to speak to you more about that in just a moment. Considering we've been stepping through sort of your life and how you found your way to where you are, was there someone influential for you that spoke to you about sort of how to deal with violence and how to talk about it with your friends?
Well, absolutely. I think the first person always is my mum. I think having a positive influence like my mum in my life was a big positive in my life. And I think one of the other ones that I can, if you refer to like a worker, I think when I first arrived, I was introduced to a basketball program through the Les 20 Men Foundation, and I got one positive male role model that is still currently one of my mentors. His name is Jim, and he introduced me to basketball, and I think playing in that environment, I think down in Braybrook, where we used to call it the Little United Nations, and being around a bunch of different people from different parts of the world all coming together and doing something positive was awesome. And I think being around him and seeing how he interacted with everyone and seeing how he went about and encouraged everyone to be their best self, I think that really influenced me and it really changed my mindset and how I see people, how I perceive life and where I want to take myself, I guess.
Now at age 27, you're a youth worker, you know, and youth workers are really on the front line of engaging with and being able to properly communicate with kids that might be going through a really, really rough time in their lives. But you specialise in and study and work in this area, so you sort of know, and kids will trust you to a certain degree. When Victoria Police come out and say to us as parents, you know, you've got to talk to your kids about violence, I kind of go into panic mode because I think, I don't know how to have this conversation. Where do I start? What do I do? That's different for you, of course, Gorm. So how do we as parents that don't have the skills generally to approach something like this, how do we take those first steps?
I think there's no correct way. There's no one step that you can do to make everything just perfect and right. But I think early interventions is a big part. And I think working with young people early stages in building their identity, their values, finding out their values, and having a positive relationship, building trust with the young person is really, really crucial. So therefore, when challenges do arise, they actually can tap into that and being resilient in themselves. And also knowing that there's a group of people that are around them and surrounding them that are able to support them if a bigger problem comes across. And I think kids having families to fall back on, it's great. And them having positive peers is also great, and also having a third party influence, like a youth worker, as you may say, like someone like me or someone like one of my team members, and being able to support that young person and also support the family, because at the moment the families also need a huge amount of support.
How do you teach kids to talk to each other about issues like this? Because I can't imagine it's the first point of call in any conversation when you're 13 years old.
Look, I just think, first of all, is just finding out who they are and working with their identity, really, and finding out what their values are, and not the values of their group. What do they want to achieve? And I think we try to break it down as simple as possible for them. And also, I think a lot of these young people also that we're referring to are victims of circumstances, I guess, and like they come from a single parent home, or they come from a, you know, like a refugee background, let's say, or someone who's never seen anyone in their family hold down a job for a huge amount of time, or their siblings coming in and out of a juvenile center. So I think all those things influence their decisions. Maybe in school they're not up to date with everything and they're struggling to connect to anyone at school. And I think this is where it's crucial to have those third-party members and someone like us at the Les Tournament Foundation, having those programs to actually support that young person so they don't fall through the gaps. And I think it's really, really crucial for the community to all link and have that young person, instead of them falling through that gap, there's someone there to identify the problem before the problems become a problem and working with it. And I think one of the biggest things that everyone needs to understand is the problem is the problem, not the kid. So we need to address the problem before we address the kid.
And that's a really interesting point you raise. It's almost more about helping someone discover their identity and their place in the world at a time when it's quite confusing than it is about saying, no, just, you know, don't do this, don't go and punch somebody.
Yeah, I think kids are always going to fall into where they feel comfortable. And I think being around your friends, doing things that are for right now, and all those things seem fun. And I think a lot of the time, young people find themselves in environments that they honestly most likely don't want to be in, but they're just there because they are trying to avoid all the other negative things that are happening in their lives.
Gourmet Marmor is with you. He's an outreach youth worker with the Les Twentyman Foundation. You're on the Conversation Hour. My name's Rochelle Hunt. Warwick Long is with you, of course, as well. We're looking at conversations that you have with young people in your life, and I'm talking 10 to 15 years of age. Police are urging us, pleading with us, to talk to them about violence. Patrick's called in from Glenormiston. I don't even know where that is. I'm going to show my ignorance here. Patrick, welcome.
Hi, Rich. Hi, Warwick. Glenormiston is just between Camperdown and Terang.
Thank you.
I'm calling because I've worked with young people since I was one myself back in 1979, and that's been sort of main focus of my career. One of the issues with a lot of young people is they don't really comprehend the finality of violence and death. because they're conditioned that by their video games and their movies and all that sort of stuff, that it's not an ending. I was working with a young man who was considering suicide, and we were working strongly with him, and he felt very undervalued. And one of the reasons he wanted to commit suicide was to see how many people came to his funeral. And he had no comprehension of the fact that, well, he's going to be dead, so he's not going to see anybody at his funeral. And so I used my contacts a bit and took him to the morgue in a major centre and showed him a dead person. And that's when he was able to comprehend the finality of death, and he talked about it with his friends.
And that's extreme, Patrick, and I wonder whether that falls into, I guess, the same conversation. We're seeing, you know, the grieving families now, and we see this quite often, where they actually send their love and their strength out to the families of the perpetrator, that they say, I know that you're grieving with this as well, because that idea of finality, that they don't really comprehend that. So, Patrick, I think you know, you might be right there. And of course, if you need to reach out to someone, the number for Lifeline is 13 1414 13 1414.
You're listening to The Conversation Hour. We're talking about how to talk to kids and about violence, and how to get them talking to each other about it as well. 1300 222 774 is the number if you'd like to call. Daniel's called from Sunshine West. Hi, Daniel.
Morning.
Are you there, Daniel?
How you doing? Good morning.
Morning, Daniel. We've got you. What did you want to say?
Well, I'd just like to, in terms of, I was brought up from South Korea to migrate to Australia in Melbourne, and I was actually the first Asian to be in schools, and that's when I actually found that there was been a number of cultural differences in going to primary school and high school. But what I think, what the current issue is, that we are being too lenient on our younger generation. Our younger generation don't have the full understanding or scope what multicultural is, what we need to do as a human being and also individual, and what the right and the wrong is. But there's a lot of confusion with the younger generation, because I can remember when I was younger, that my parents were very, very strict. And this is why who I am, and that's why I do other voluntary work for the Department of Human Services as well, in terms of bullying and other aspects of individuals. But I'd just like to illustrate that point of view, because...
So when you say we're too lenient, are you talking about parents are too soft, or you're talking about the punishment is too soft?
Well, it's the parents, because it comes to the parents' responsibility, no doubt about that. It's the parents need to guide their and give that responsibility of what's right and wrong. Guide them what the focus is in life in general, what they want to do, and it is the responsibility of the parents. And lucky I had, because I actually was adopted and in young age of 7 years old, and lucky I had a great parents who actually supported me. But in terms of it's the culture of the environment where they are, and that needs to be changed. But these days, I think the punishment as well is too lenient, because we just can't keep giving voluntary or community services to these individuals doing graffiti or doing unforeseen circumstances. And we need to be more strict in terms of that. Because if they understand that this punishment is this A and B, there will be a diminish in criminal activity.
Hey, Daniel, can I challenge you a little bit on that, just in terms of my knowledge? And feel free to correct me if I'm wrong here, because I'm not a legal expert, but I feel like there has been a lot of strengthening in laws in terms of punishments for some of these crimes. So they're actually harsher now than what the punishments would have been in the past. But you're saying they should go further than that?
Well, in terms of, doing it further, I'm not a legal aspect or have that knowledge, but in terms of is that we need to be more strict in some of the areas, and the education is the main focus as well in schools.
Education is important. Daniel, thank you so much. Warwick, it's interesting though. Daniel raised a point saying that as parents, you know, we need to guide them. But how often, and maybe this could be within your own circle or when you watch news, when something horrific happens, like the death of this young, of Solomon, a young 15-year-old boy, the parents have tried to guide them. They have come from a loving family. There has been support there. I don't know whether that's the only solution here. And I'm not saying that there is one solution, but time and time again, you will hear this person came from a loving, supported family, and yet yada, yada, yada happened.
Along those lines, Carol in Castlemaine has a suggestion along that issue in terms of solutions. Her point is the quote, "It takes a village to raise a child gives us as a society the vital clue into the success of building a cohesive society. Our job as that village is not to pass the buck when it comes to supporting our children, their parents and families and the community structures that we all need." So Carol's probably going that little bit further and talking about it needs to be more than just the parents, but the village as well. If you have a solution to offer, we'd love to hear from you. 1300 222 774.
While we're all doing our best to stay connected, open your ears to the world with the ABC Listen app.
Dive deeper with current affairs live radio shows and podcasts like The Signal, Hack and Late Night Live.
This is The Hack Podcast.
I kept telling the detective this wasn't me.
Or step back from non-stop breaking news with a range of live music stations and podcasts like Conversations and Unravel.
I'm Richard Feidler. Thanks for listening.
Open your ears to the world.
Download the ABC Listen app today.
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria, this is The Conversation Hour
with Rochelle Hunt and Warwick Long.
How do you speak to 10 to 15-year-olds about violence? Police and community members have called on us as parents and as carers, as teachers, to talk to young people in our lives about violence. Gourmah Moore is with you as well. He's an outreach worker from the Les Twentyman Foundation. Gourmah, I'm interested, you know, when police say, talk to your kids, is it just about parents, and can we actually cut through? There was a local woman from the local Pacific Islander community that was saying, hang on a second, we've actually got outreach workers and youth workers that work within, specific to our community, and they're the ones that police should be supporting and should be giving access to. Here's just a little bit of actually what Rita had to say.
The media likes to look at our NRL players and really highlight all the big muscly men. Well, guess what? You know, our young men are out there and that's what they see. And so part of them are thinking, okay, we're warriors. All right then. You know, we're the macho ones. You know, and then they're out there and look at what they're doing.
She did actually go on to talk about as well the role that the community members play. So here's just a little bit more of Rita talking about community members and the work that community members do.
If you're going to be working with Pacific Island kids, then we need to see Pacific Island workers. And there are already qualified Pacific Island members who can do these jobs, but they're not getting these jobs. There are already organisations that are formed by Pacific Islanders that the government can pour their resources into.
So, Gourmah, should we be pouring our resources into people that work specifically with different community groups, with people of different cultural backgrounds?
I think so, but I think first of all, I think it's important for us to acknowledge that a lot of the families and parents are desperate, and they're really, really out putting their hand out there and saying, "Help me, help my kid, help my family." And I think it's first that we need to acknowledge that as a whole community. And I think it's like someone said earlier, it takes a whole community to actually raise a child. And I think, yes, I think we need more workers. I think we need more cultural workers. And I think it needs to be from not just culturally, like a kid. It doesn't have to be someone who connects exactly from the same culture. I think we need to have a variety of youth workers. And I think we should employ people from different walks of life also, because young people connect with whoever they want to connect with. And it doesn't necessarily mean you look exactly the same or talk the same or walk the same. I think we need to be diverse in the way we approach it. And we need to be diverse in the programs that we give them. And we need to be diverse in conversation, because Australia is a very diverse country. And I think these young people, a lot of their friends are diverse. And these kids don't just walk and hang out with the exact same people all the time. They interact with different people. And I think we need to give them all the tools to actually thrive in our community. And I think I'll keep going back to what we do and how we do it. And I think our programs, like we have a program called Embrace, and that brings all kids from different walks of life. And we have different mentors in there that have come from different parts of the planet. and they all have their own little views, but we all come together and we sit down and we actually take these kids on a journey for 2 years. And that is a self-discovery journey. They get to hear their own stories. They get to talk about their hurt.